the subject that concerns something that is being talked about a little bit in the election campaign, and that is early childhood education. And my guest is a lady from Vancouver, so we're going to get her on the phone here in just a moment. Let's just see if this works. Can you hear me, Emily?
I can.
Oh, that's good. So we've got her. There is Emily, and it's Maleshko, I understand.
Yeah, Maleshko, yeah.
Just because you're just... Okay, so you hear me, and you're calling from, or we're called you from Vancouver. Tell me, is it... first thing I have to know, is it raining in Vancouver?
It is not raining. It's cool, but not raining yet.
So that means you can see the North Shore Mountains.
Yeah, it's starting to get a little cloudy, but it hasn't started raining yet.
Because I was told if you can't see the North Shore Mountains, it's raining. If you can see them, it's going to rain.
Pretty much, yep.
So tell me your position and where you're working.
Well, I'm the executive director for the Early Childhood Educators of British Columbia, which is a professional organization for the people that work with young children and have specialized training in the field of early childhood education.
Okay. Professional training. That's something we're going to talk about, how they're paid, etc. But there is training available here in British Columbia at the college level, I guess, for early childhood educators.
A college and university.
Oh, there's a university. There's mm-hmm. Is there a degree specifically with early childhood education?
Yeah, we're actually very fortunate here in British Columbia because there isn't very many actually in Canada, but here in BC we have Capilano University that offers a Bachelor of Early Childhood Education.
Capilano, that's mm-hmm. interesting, very interesting.
Yep.
So listen, when we talk about early childhood education, what are we talking about?
Well, we're talking about people that have gone into the workforce or into the sector to work with young children and with their families to be a support for their overall child's development, to enhance the quality of their life, to bring enriched experiences for children and families, and to be a support to community.
That's quite vast, but there are a lot of interesting words there, like enrich a child's life. Tell me a quick question. I read this summer, as a matter of fact, I think I still have the books at home. How much of a child's personality is formed, let's say, before the age of six?
Well, that's, you know, it's been really interesting over the last 20 years that more scientific data has come into play in understanding that. And 90% of a person's brain is developed by 5 years old.
Oh, by the time they're five.
By the time they're five, which is interesting in comparison about how much is invested in the early years, which isn't really significant. It seems there's this magic number of five when more and more supports are put into two young children, like in the school system, but before that there's relatively very little.
Yeah, something we're going to talk about. I think I read somewhere else, too, that one of the best investments any country, as a country, as a society can make, is in its children.
Absolutely, yes.
The returns, the dividends are considerable. But let's just go back up just for a moment here, Emily. Tell me a little bit about you. You're in Vancouver now, and you've been there for how long?
I've been in here for just over about 5.5 years now, actually.
Okay, and where were you before that?
Well, I grew up in a small community, 100 Mile House, which I'm sure lots of your viewers probably know where that is, being closer to the interior there. But that's where I grew up and started my practice and lived there for over 25 years and then moved to Prince Rupert for 10 years, so another small northern community.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think a lot of our listeners would know where 100 Mile is. I haven't been there for a while. It's been a while since I drove up that 97. Okay, so now we know a little bit about you. It sounds like your whole career has been in early childhood education.
Yes, absolutely. I've been doing this since I was 19 when I went and volunteered for work experience, actually in high school, even before that, where I volunteered and knew that I always wanted and had a desire and felt really comfortable working with young children and had that opportunity to take my training in Kamloops and then move back and work for 10 years particularly support a particular focus with supporting children with additional support needs.
Yeah.
And have always felt it's always been a very interesting profession that always continues to grow and develop as the years have gone by, and the way we do and practice within our field and the understanding of the early years has always developed throughout those years.
It's actually a question I have later on, but I might as well ask it now because you've touched on it. What has changed in the last 50 years with respect to, say, and we can equate, I think I've got that written down here somewhere in my notes, equating early childhood education with daycare, child daycare. Mm-hmm. But what's changed over the last 50 years, if you can sort of sum it up for me?
Well, there's been a lot of changes, actually, and I think one of the biggest things that I've noticed over my career over, you know, 20-plus years now, is that the general community and families understand the importance of the early years, and that's come through because of the research and evidence that supports that, to understand child development, the importance of the early years to give children and families the best possible support systems, the best possible experiences, and that we know now that young children experience the most rapid period of growth and change during the human lifespan in those early years. So that's really changed. So our education has changed throughout that time. There was a time when there was no early childhood education programs in the province. We had limited regulations, where that's definitely changed. We have a strong regulations that early childhood educators have to follow when we have child care programs. And we've also seen big changes in the sector itself, where we see early childhood educators in a diversity of programs. So they might be working in a child care program, they might be working a family resource program, support a child development, infant development, or a variety of different community support networks for families in the community.
Okay, it's been major, and it sounds like, from what you're telling me, that the community, meaning all of us in our country, have become more aware. So, answer this question: is there a crisis in Canada? Does Canada have a national policy on early childhood education and care programs?
Well, we don't right now. The only province that does actually is Quebec. They've actually developed policy and a system to address the child care crisis in that province. But we know, Canada is in a crisis, and particularly here in BC, we see this worsening crisis within child care over the last 30, 40 years. So we see there's a failure of current policies, and that's reflected in the high fees. So families really struggle with paying high fees. Often it's the second highest expense for a family after their housing, and in some communities that's even reflected as being their highest expense.
We're going to get to that. I want to talk about that, the whole question of fees. But in the meantime, I want to tell you, the listener, you're listening, you, the voice you just heard before mine was Emily Milechko. Emily Milechko, who is the executive director of the Early Childhood Education Association of BC. She's in Vancouver, and you're listening to The Core of the Matter on CKVS 93.7. And the very important sponsor of this program is Askew's Foods. And I know that you, especially in the Salmon Arm area, you're very familiar with Askew's. They have two stores here, one downtown, one uptown. And that new uptown store is open every day of the week from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. And service is very important to Askew's. Quality and service since 1929. Back to my guest, Emily I got to keep looking at it. Milechko.
Yes.
Emily, we talked just for a moment about you. You mentioned high costs, and mm-hmm. apparently BC has the second highest fees in Canada. Eh? Is that correct?
That's right. So, if we talk about some of the latest stats from 2012, the parent fees have seen, like, BC infant toddler spaces, there's an average of over $1,000 a month, and toddlers about $900, and 3 to 5 year olds 760. So Ontario is the only other higher province than us.
Okay, so it's a major expense for any family, regardless of their income. And so what about another factor? Is there a waiting time? Is there lots of spaces available, but they're very expensive, or what?
Well, that's another big issue that goes to the child care crisis, as we describe it, that there's not enough licensed child care spaces. There's only enough for 1 in 5 children in British Columbia. And because of the high fees that parents are paying and the low amount of spaces, it has developed prime conditions for an illegal underground market. So we're seeing that many families are forced into finding child care with unregulated, uneducated caregivers, and that's a big concern. And we've seen some of the results of that, and some of them have had really dire consequences for young children and their families.
Yeah, that's something we want to avoid. And, of mm-hmm. course, one of the other things, too, I guess, is in this whole question is standardization and trying to not only regulate it but bring up the quality. Is this what you're trying to do? Is that a major...
Absolutely. So that's one of the big focuses for our organization and with our partner organization, the Coalition of Child Care Advocates of BC. We have taken the child care crisis and have informed discussion and developed a plan to address the child care crisis here in British Columbia.
Yes, and we're going to talk about that in just a moment, the $10 a day. But the other thing, I just want to go through this... this crisis, if you will, because I would like to sort of identify some of the things that have happened, and maybe a little later on we'll talk about how Quebec found some very interesting results from their own, and that's why we're very fortunate in Canada. We have this province, fairly populous province, that had this experience with some really interesting results. But one of the other things, some women forced to abandon paid work and career goals. Do you want to talk about that just for a moment?
Yeah, so people often relate the child care crisis to being a woman's issue, and definitely that many women have had to prolong their leave, and then often have found that they're not employable anymore, or they've been out of the workforce for such a long time that it's hard to get back into it. That causes concern later on in life because they haven't been able to, you know, build up their pension. Their Canadian pension.
Exactly.
So that's true. And then also another woman's issue is that the vast majority of early childhood educators that work in the sector also have very low wages overall. So these people that work with children on a day-to-day basis can't even afford to put their own children into the same child care program they're working in.
Yeah, and it all contributes to gender inequality.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I could go on and on. I asked about why it's so important. We've covered that. I have to say, you talk to some people and they say, well, you know, early childhood education or child care, it's just basically children playing by themselves with mother interacting at times. So how do you respond to that? Like, is that really what's going on?
No, it's not, and it's always been one of those questions or one of those conversation returns that we have to continue to educate people about what do early childhood educators actually do, and what qualifies as a high quality program, and when we look at that, we look at programs that offer high quality experiences, that they have a direct connection with their families, that they're a support for the family, that the children have access to interactions with their peers, that they're connected to the community. There's a lot that goes into everyday programming and curriculum development, and as the sector develops, that just becomes more and more evident in high-quality programs and within our post-secondary education, and we're seeing that develop, that we see children as competent individuals that have a role in society for who they are today, not only for who they'll become later on in life. And that's what early childhood educators do for young children.
I understand. I have to go back, though, because there are some people that feel that taking children away from their mothers is sort of like going down that road of some of these, well, more government interference and not just coddling them, but setting them up for a particular type of life. I don't know how to express it because it's not necessarily my own feelings, but I'm trying to echo the feelings of some people. How do you respond to that?
Yeah, because we do get that question a lot, too. And I think what has happened in today's society is that there's this disconnect or this divide that's being developed between, say, a working mother or a non-working mother or a parent that decides to put their child in a preschool program. And really that isn't the conversation that warrants warrants that kind of divide, because we know now that there's over 70% of women are in the paid workforce. So the reality is, for most Canadian families, is that the mother will be at work. And that's not to say that if a family or a parent or a mother decides to stay at home, that isn't a good choice for that family either. So the problem with what's happening now and why we need to have a plan to address the child care crisis is that there is relatively very little choice for families. Either they can't afford it, or if they can't afford it, they can't find it. And then the people that are working in that program are paid too little, and we see an influx of growth of commercial child care chains also within British Columbia. And those are programs that are looking at children as a revenue source, so their fees are going way, way, way up. So there's programs that where some families are being charged close to $2,000 a month per child. And this changes the dialogue about how do we view the early years. Parents, particularly mothers, are forced into feeling guilt for putting their child into a child care program. And those are the kinds of the discussions that we're trying to change, because we're not there to take over the role of the parents. We're there to support the role of the parents.
Exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm. You mentioned about three different things. There's a crisis in availability, there's a crisis in cost, there's a crisis in quality, and there's a crisis in the people that work in these daycares. Some of them highly qualified, but they just can't, for whatever reason, they're not paid very much. And you're also, another part of the crisis, sounds like, I know that there are some big corporations moving into this area where it's now for profit. And that could be something that, with a new $10 a day, they could deal with that.
Exactly. Yeah, we could, because of the accountability measures that we've incorporated into our plan.
Another point that I just came across in my about these daycare systems, which I thought was kind of interesting, some of them, it's a good early childhood education, again, it's a good time to start a second language, because children learn to speak when they're two, or even some of them even before that. And so when they're in these programs, it's a good opportunity to start a second language. Do you agree with that?
Oh, for sure. I've worked with children that often taught me other languages, so they're the ones that are coming with the diversity. That's the exciting part about our sector, is that, you know, our programs are developed to reflect the needs and the families that we're supporting, and that's something else that early childhood education does really well.
Yeah. Yes, very well. Okay, just before we get to the $10 a day, because I'm really interested in this and how you plan to implement it and how it sort of pays for itself. But before we go there, let's just deal with Quebec just for a moment. What are some of the things that Quebec accomplished or that they found from their experience? I think it was started in 1997.
That's right. So after they started out with a $5 a day daycare and moved up to a $7, and then now they're moving into a sliding scale. So there are things that have been happening over those years. But after 12 years at $7 a day, the Quebec scheme more than paid for itself through mothers' annual income and consumption taxes. So for every dollar Quebec invests, it recoupes $1.05, and Ottawa receives 44 cents.
That's a pretty good investment.
That's huge. Imagine if I wish I could get that at the bank.
Yeah, exactly, in this day and age.
Yeah, exactly.
Carry on. Sorry to interrupt.
Oh, no problem. And by 2008, 70,000 more women had entered the workforce, and their employment pumped an additional $5.2 billion into the economy and increased their GDP by 1.7%. So even economically, it just makes sense. But there was other side benefits, like one of the things that has stood out for me, that there was less families accessing social assistance because they could actually afford to go back to work or go back to school.
So the daycare system is something that maybe the whole society pays for, mm-hmm. and that money, and it's a way of making our society a little more equitable, spreading out the wealth, because now these parents can go to work. The daycare is not going to break the bank. And they are in the. It sounds interesting.
Yeah, and then what they're finding too is that parents aren't investing in offshore banks or anything. They're investing in their community. They're putting their children in more activities. They're buying more clothes. They're buying, you know, healthy food at the grocery store. So they're investing that money right back into their communities, which stimulates the economy in local communities as well.
Stimulates the economies. You know, I mean, this thing sounds like a no-brainer. Like, so here's the question. We'll get to it now, and I'm going to ask you again. Probably we'll talk about it again. But why, from what you're telling me and some of the stuff that I came across in my research, economically it makes sense, and Quebec demonstrated that.
Yes.
Why wouldn't we have a rush to have universal daycare across Canada?
I think that's a million-dollar question. I wish I could answer that myself, because it just makes absolute sense at so many levels. It helps reduce poverty. It supports women's issues. It supports economy, all of these different things. And it's good for young children. And it's another support system for families. I don't know why not. And I think, you know, it's just changed. I think what's been helpful for us, and moving on to the 10-a-day plan, is that we actually have something that's concrete that people could understand. Because we've always talked about having an affordable, high-quality public system, but that's as far as we went. So now we actually have some structure around what could that actually look like. And I think that's the difference.
Well, we're going to get to that $10 a day in just a minute. The voice you just heard was Emily Malechko, who is the executive director of Early Childhood Education in Vancouver, the association for the province of British Columbia. And we're talking about early childhood education. Can you think of a topic more important? I have difficulty. Maybe water and air are pretty important, but our children and how we educate them and what we can do for them, and Emily has touched on a number of those. Back to my guest before we have a little bit of music, Emily, because we do have to take a little break, but let's for a moment talk just a moment for a moment about this $10 a day child care plan. So when did you start work, and who was involved in researching this?
Well, this was a partnership between the Coalition of Child Care Advocates of BC and the Early Childhood Educators of BC. We started this in 2010 with an extensive briefing process where we went around the whole province. We thought, you know, we'd do a couple of key presentations with our initial ideas, and it just was met with such huge excitement that I think we did over 100 presentations within that first year. So we believe that this is a concrete, innovative, and made in BC solution to the child care crisis. So we were responding to two conflict realities. On one hand, BC was implementation of the full school day kindergarten for 5-year-olds, and there was more focus on early learning, with Strong Starts, Ready, Set, Learn, those kinds of programs delivered to the Ministry of Education and the Boards of Education.
Yeah.
And this actually really reflects a national and international trend.
Ah.
And then on the other hand, we were seeing this worsening childcare crisis that wasn't being addressed. So we thought, we have, instead of always reacting to funding being taken away or negative context of our sector, we wanted to develop something that was concrete. And we know it's innovative, but we know it's doable.
It is doable.
It is doable. And now we actually, people all said, well, what can we do? So people started endorsing the plan, saying this could actually be a real solution here in British Columbia. And right now, between support for the plan now represents over 2 million British Columbians.
Wow.
So we have 35 municipal governments, 28 school districts, or actually it's 30 school districts, Van City Credit Unions, ECD and child care organizations, community service organizations, health sector, businesses, labor, you name it, people get it, and they're saying it's time that we start investing in our children this way.
And you call it a community plan for a public system of integrated early care and learning in BC.
That's right. A mouthful. So that is why we do call it now the 10-a-day plan, and I can talk about why we came to that, the tag line or that name, to help shorten it. But
So let's talk about, for a moment, some of the benefits. Like, let's start with children. How do they benefit from this 10-a-day program? I mean, I know that we're repeating a lot of the things we've already talked about, but let's, for a moment, just remind ourselves how children benefit from this program.
So what we really built in within this plan is building the capacity of the early childhood educator through education. So children themselves would benefit from having high quality early childhood educators. Their families would have access to licensed facilities that have a higher accountability and higher quality of programs and services for their children.
Yes. Okay. Quality and building capacity and training more early childhood educators, because they're going to be needed.
Absolutely. And we're hoping, you know, if and when this plan comes into effect, that lots of people that have left the sector will come back in, because after about 5 years, we lose about 50% of our qualified early childhood educators because they just can't make it.
No, it's the pay isn't very good, is it?
No, and very limited benefits. It really depends on where and where they can find the work, but overall, it's a real struggle.
So how does the economy, we just talked about this with Quebec, but the economy benefits from the 10-a-day plan. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we, you know, work from the Human Early Learning Partnership out at UBC, Dr. Paul Kershaw and the New Deals for Family, he and his colleagues have worked out what some of those benefits to BC economy would be. So he estimates that 17,000 more women would be working right away, 500 million more would be taxes would be collected, early childhood educators would be better paid, and 300 million would be saved by businesses. So this is good for business, because if you talk to any business owner, they know the struggle of having to continually bring in or educate and train new staff, because they lose staff because they can't find childcare when they come back from a parental leave, or you know their employees can't afford it. So that it's a constant reinvestment into their business.
Now, some companies have their own child care on
site. Absolutely. Like they have figured out that this is needed for their company.
Exactly. And, mm-hmm. and university is very progressive. Well, one of the things I just want to mention here is an overall comment. Many people that I've met from Europe, I haven't spent that much time in Europe, four different visits, but many people coming from Europe tell us that we talk a lot about our children, but we don't walk the talk. And I guess really what this is all about is starting to really walk the talk.
Well, people are shocked, actually. You know, and I've done so many presentations and talked about this so much, and people are still shocked that, you know, that Canada remains one of the most wealthiest countries in the world, in the economic world, and the international public spending. We remain last on these well-developed countries. Like, we spend the least amount. And then we look at international accessibility for those same countries. Again, Canada remains last, and people are like, well, that's not what I thought my Canada was about. So we don't invest the money like how we talk about children. You're right. We hear that too, and people are shocked by those statistics.
Well, I'm hoping that this program, as small as it may be, our reach, but I'm hoping that we somehow can raise awareness and have more people push to have this particular plan in place. And in a short while, we'll talk a little bit more about some of the things that are being done. But let's just continue along this line. I mean, women, you already talk about, especially mothers, mm-hmm. benefit from the 10-a-day plan.
Yeah.
And families, of course, the same thing. Let's say even you have a full family, but in today's world, it takes two earning to make it.
Exactly. One point here, what's important to bring up is child poverty here in British Columbia. So the latest statistics are showing, and this has been going on for, over 10 years here in BC, that one out of five children in this province lives in poverty. And we know that poverty is one of the most significant environmental risk factors for child development. So when we look at a plan like this and supporting families, so the plan does say that, child care would cost $10 a day for full-time and $7 a day for part-time and free for families that make under $40,000 annually. But, and it also makes children more vulnerable to lifelong chronic diseases, school failure, and criminal involvement. All of these things, there's stress, family stress, and social exclusion. All of these things come from poverty. But what a 10-a-day plan is that we know that if we invest, it's one of the single fastest thing that any government can do to alleviate poverty for young children in a province. It's one of the biggest key factors of doing that.
Well, just recently I read a report talking about the social determinants of health and longevity and all kinds of things. And, of course, the gentleman who wrote the article, I think it was a guy, said his point was raise salaries and you'll already be doing something for assisting people's health. You actually, and because they found a direct correlation between people's income and how healthy they are. And of course, mm-hmm. there's the other part of that question, the cost to our healthcare system, to all our services, our social services, because of this poverty that you mentioned. 20% of children in this province live in poverty. And of course, once you have those mothers, because they're usually mothers associated with children, mm-hmm. or fathers, but most of the time it's mothers, then you're improving it. So we talked, about now let's see how just reiterate how employers benefit from this $10 a day mm-hmm. plan that you have, because it's not just $10 a day, it's a whole plan. It's rather involved.
Yeah, exactly. So when you're thinking about the employer, I mentioned that an employer will benefit from not having to retrain, but then there's also that whole feeling of feeling secure because you're leaving your child in a high quality environment, so you feel good about that, so there's less stress and less.
And that's a major factor. I don't know how many times I heard about poor women trying to get out of work just so they can go and pick up their child because they're worried about what's going on at the child care, wherever it is, especially cases, as you mentioned, that are sort of under the table. They're unregulated, and in many cases, people, because they're pushed, they have to go to these places that they are not fully confident of.
Exactly. And what, even I have a quote here from one of the city councils that endorsed the plan. And it says the lack of childcare in this community area means that people are turning away local jobs and not moving here. They're having to leave the area, which is an economic barrier for businesses and services in our community. So these councils are understanding the connection for businesses and what this means for them.
That's a really interesting point because we're all talking about jobs. And here's an example where we as a whole province could make a huge impact on the whole province and all these different communities because of what happens when these women, mainly women, but when these people are able to go to work and they have affordable, good quality daycare. So you also improve the number of people working in that sector, and you want them to be paid a reasonable salary.
Yep, absolutely. And I experience this daily when I was practicing frontline work, particularly when I was living in Prince Rupert, and there was a whole new economic boom. We were talking about building the container port. We were getting my program itself, which had a variety of different programs. I was getting 2-3 phone calls a day from people outside of the province, outside of this country, saying, "We want to move to your community. Is there room for my child?"
Yeah.
And it's like, "Sorry, I don't have any room, or we don't offer that particular service." And they're like, "What?"
Yeah.
They just could not believe it.
Yeah, it is sad. Well, I tell you what, we're going to take a little break here because I want to play just a little music, so we give both of us just a short little break. Back to my guest, Emily Mlechko, and we're talking about daycare, early childhood education here on CKVS 93.7. And Emily, we were talking about the 10 a day, but we didn't really finish. I think you wanted to tell me a little bit about accountability with respect to how this is followed up, I guess?
Yeah, sure. So the plan itself, which you can find on the ECBC website, anybody can look there, has actually 7 key highlights within the plan. But to be part of the new public system, so we are talking about developing a new public system, is that there has to be some accountability measures for this new public funding. So the first I mentioned is cap parent fees at $10 a day for full-time, $7 a day for part-time, and no user fees for under $40,000 annual income. Improve wages and education to an average of $25 an hour plus benefits for early childhood educators. Include all children. So programs would have to include all children, and they would receive additional education to do that. You know, children with extra support needs, or children, you know, with English as a second language, all of those different things that happen in various communities. It would also have to meet a demonstrated community need. So just like how hospitals are built or new schools, there is no one government agency right now that looks at what is needed in each community. How many childcare spaces are needed in this area of a community? So plans based on community input would be developed, and they would need to meet the demonstrated community need. And the programs would also be consistent with the early learning frameworks. So this is a document that's supported and has been developed with early childhood educators, and it's within the Ministry of Education, looking at a comprehensive look at child development and what that looks like. And there's also a First Nations early learning framework. So those documents would support the variety of different programs that would be available for families throughout the province.
That's very interesting. And you mentioned they can go. Is the website ecebc.ca?
Yep.
So that's Echo Charlie Echo BC.ca.
That's right.
Early Childhood Education of British Columbia.ca. We don't need to give out a phone number. They can go to that website or get a friend to. But there's a couple other things that I think you wanted to touch on before we run out of time. Like, for instance, what else people can do to, they can go to the website, they can inform themselves, but is there anything else they can do to be part of this developing 10-a-day system?
There is. So our coalition partners have developed a 10-a-day campaign, and there's a new website called the10aday.ca where people can add their voice. They can go on there and endorse the plan and add some comments and feedbacks, because we know that this affects not only young families with young children, this affects grandparents, it affects business, it affects community leaders, it affects every part of society. So to have those additional voices has been really humbling and exciting. So this past Sunday was Grandparents' Day, and we've seen grandparents from across the province talking about how the 10-a-day plan is something that they support for their grandchildren. So, you know, they're still looking for people that are willing to be approached and to add their piece to that if your listeners are interested. If you go to the ECBC Facebook page, we are part of a Canadian Child Care Federation that has looked at the four main parties' positions on child care for the current election, for the platforms, and has a number of different questions that you can ask candidates and ask them, what are they doing? What are they thinking about? What does this mean? Because this is a really exciting time for us in our life as an early childhood educator, when child care has become an election platform. So this is a time that we need to be talking to all the candidates from every party about.
Go ahead. I get excited about this. No, I understand. I mean, even though we don't, on national radio or television, we don't necessarily talk in detail about this particular issue, it is the type of debate and discussion that should be going on at the local level, especially the community level. Is that what you're getting at?
Exactly. So we have gone out and talked. I've actually been to Salmon Arm, and that community has endorsed, the city council there has endorsed the plan. And it's an exciting time for us to be able to talk about this. But it's talking to your friends at the table, or talking to your parents, or to children, or to your friends about why this actually makes sense.
And
how this does affect everybody at every level of our life.
Well, there's not much of a... I can't think of another program that could be so large, long-lasting, and broadly shared by everyone in society.
Absolutely.
You know, it's the type of thing. This isn't something that we're just targeting somebody. It's very similar to our healthcare system, which I was going to ask about the universal child care benefit, which I would imagine you would say, well, let's just keep it for now.
Well, for sure. You know, like, obviously families are in need of that additional spending money. We have based all of the work we've done on concrete research and evidence, and we've also actually have worked with Insight West polling, and they asked families throughout BC, what do they think of that, and they said they'd rather have that money go to direct services, because what's not happening with within that, it's not creating new child care spaces.
No.
So they can't find the spaces for child. So it's sort of, when we hear the name of it, the Universal Child Care Benefit, it isn't providing new child care spaces and what that looks like.
And really, it's only a drop in the bucket.
Yeah, it really is for right now. And based on what we have learned, we need a comprehensive system that supports the development of affordable, high-quality child care.
Yeah, like, and we don't have in Canada, for instance, with our healthcare system, we have a universal, has the five pillars that it's, and one of them is universal, publicly funded. One of the points that keeps coming up when people talk about, well, we can give money directly to the parents, is that, do we do that for education? Do we give money to the parents and say, okay, go out and educate your child? No. Mm-hmm. And nor do we do it for health care. And I think what you're getting at is we should have a universal system where nobody's left behind.
Exactly. I often like to point out, too, like, nobody goes, you never register your child for grade 2, and then they look at your income and say, oh, sorry, you don't make enough money, so you can't use it.
Exactly.
Or there's no space for you, so wait until next year, and maybe then your child can find a space. It's not the way we view education. And so we wonder, why is there such a magical number of the age 5 when we know it's an inherent right for all children to access high-quality educational experiences, and that's what we're asking for here.
Exactly. So if the benefits are so obvious, which makes the real costs quite low and actually reasonable, we touched on that. We didn't go into great detail, but we know that exists. The economic benefits are legion, and that's evidenced by the experience in Quebec. So why don't we have a major debate in this? We are talking about it a bit, but not a major debate as to who can provide the best plan. Like the other, I was going to ask you, like, does one of the parties have a universal daycare plan as part of their policy?
There is. So the NDP, the New Democrats, have promised that they would build an affordable universal national child care program based on that wouldn't pay more than $15 per day per child. And the Green Party has its own commitment to restore and revamp the 2005 agreements reached between the federal government and provinces and territories to achieve a universal child care program. And the Liberals do, and the Conservatives. So child care is on the top, like, it's being talked about. But as us as citizens of Canada and of British Columbia, it's going to be us that keeps bringing it to the table. So every time, like, I'm really interested to see on Thursday, I think it's the debate again.
The Globe and Mail debate.
On economics, on the economic structure of Canada, I'm hoping that there's a question about childcare because this will stimulate economy. So we can do that as citizens. We can write an email. It could be one question. I heard this program tonight. I'm really interested in what your party's position is. It sounds like it's a no-brainer. It will stimulate economic benefits for our community. What is your take on this? And
okay,
it's that simple.
We're running out of time. I got two questions. Well, just one. What is
okay.
The? You got 20 seconds. What does the United Nations say?
Oh, the United Nations is saying that Canada needs to do better for its children, and everything that we have in our plan is exactly what the United Nations has said Canada should do.
Emily Malechko, thank you very much for being with us. I'm completely out of time. I've got to go. Good night. Thanks again.
Good night. Thank you.